Hey there, and welcome to episode number 29 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. So in this podcast, I talk to Eric Broadbent from EVH Gear TV. So Eric has his own YouTube channel, also the podcast as well, where he interviews a lot of different guitarists from around the world. Some that have been on my podcast, including Ron Bumblefoot, also Jennifer Batten. He's also had some great interviews, including one he did last week with Jason Becker and Dave Lopez. So if you don't know the story about Jason Becker, it's very, very sad, but it's really great that he's doing what he's doing. So make sure you go check that one out. He's also done interviews with all the members from Sons of Apollo, so including Ron Mumblefoot, Mike Portney, Jeff Scott Soto, Billy Sheen. And also he talks about a lot of gear as well and does some unboxing videos where you can get to check out the new products. So make sure you check out his YouTube channel or the podcast channel. Now, during this interview, you'll hear some original music from Eric's old band called Finding Core. So you hear some of Eric's great playing in that. Let's go over to Eric's interview now and hear how he first started playing guitar.
How are you doing, Adam?
Good. How are you, mate?
Good. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you as well.
Good stuff.
All right. So I thought, well, get started about yourself, if that's okay. Like when you first started, what influenced you to start playing guitar?
Okay, that's a good one. I had two brothers and two sisters that were that always had a guitar in the house. Yeah. And I'm the youngest of five kids. And most of them were moving out when I was probably about 10, even around that age. So I probably started somewhere seriously, maybe as a teenager, kind of picked up the guitar a little bit under the teenage. But when I got into high school, that's when I started to, after trying football and trying hockey and all the sports and things like that, where I just was no good at, I thought, okay, let's try guitar. And it just kind of gravitated and it kind of moved me a lot. So I went to guitar. And I think it was probably Kiss first. Mm. Kiss was the first big, huge influence on me. Yep. Like I say a lot on my show, it's a big influence. AC/DC was big. And then, of course, Van Halen. And I'm not sure where Van Halen came in between Kiss and AC/DC, but it was right around the same time. Yep. And once I heard Eddie Van Halen, thanks to my cousin, introducing me to it, it changed the whole game for me. And that's when I determined right then and there guitar is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
So do you remember the first song you heard from Van Halen?
I do. It was Incredible Rock, and which is, okay. I talk about this a lot because I like to ask people, what's your favorite Van Halen song too? And, what did you hear first? And Cradle is not my favorite song today.
Yep.
By then, but it's important to me because that's how I discovered them. And then after hearing that, I went back and discovered the previous catalog and then became, just followed them ever since from that moment.
So what year was that? That was, just think what year that was.
Well, I probably didn't hear it the year that it came out. I heard it on record probably a good year or so, or even a year or two after.
Okay.
So, 1981, maybe even, but probably by the time I heard it, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yep. Excellent. And so when you first started, did you go to a teacher?
I did actually. Well, for the first while, it was kind of self-taught, just kind of learning, like picking up a few things by ear. Mm. And then I finally, before I went to an official teacher, both my sisters were always dating, musicians, whether it be guitar players or bass players, and they were always really good. Mm. So I always had kind of an instructor that was nearby, and it would teach me some, Van Halen riffs or, maybe if I was learning bass, I would be learning like a 12-bar blues or guitar 12-bar blues as well too, some walking lines and things like that.
Yep.
And then I did go to an instructor. In my small town where I grew up, there was one guy, he's still very, very, he's not known in the bigger cities, but he's played with a lot of the bigger artists, like a lot of contemporary recording artists. Mm-hmm. And so he's really, really big in the town. And I learned from him for probably, I studied for about 6 months, I think it was. And then he kind of said, well, I kind of got you. I think I can take you if you want to go from here on your own. More power to you. And that's what I did. I went off on my own. And this was before the days of tablature and things like that. So I did have a bit of a theory background.
Okay, yeah.
And internet and things like that and tablature ruined me as a musician after, because it gets spoiled once that stuff comes out. And it was a very good teacher, so I have to thank him for what he did show me.
Yeah, so you did. Yeah, you got the reading straight away then.
Yes.
Yeah. And then also from there, did you go on to different teachers?
Just pretty much all from there is magazines and long before the internet, magazines, and just learning by ear, playing records on my mom and dad's stereo and just kind of dropping the needle and finding the notes, and that was about it.
Oh, wow. So I think for the guitar player, Guitar World, all those type of magazines?
Yeah, back when it was Guitar for the Practicing Musician.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Used to love those. So I was just telling my boy the other day how cool it was back in that day where you'd get a record in some of those.
Yeah.
You know, the square pull-up record, tear them out, and then you could play them on your record player. They'd be scratchy and warpy and all that kind of stuff. But those were great, and you could, it would have the transcription in the magazine, and then you could re-practice with the lesson in that. So it was really cool. Then once we got into things like DVDs and video, actually long before the DVDs, I shouldn't say that, video cassettes.
Yep.
You know, like I'd pick up like the Gilbert Lessons, the REH videos, if, I think they're still around, and things like that. And that's when I could actually play some of the riffs, I would get the videotape to teach me some of the more advanced tricks and things like that. And that was a real big help to me as well, too.
Yeah, well, I think the first one I had was Steve Lukather. He's... I think it was on Beta Tape.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's... great player.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the Guitar Play magazines. I've just recently going through my old ones, because I got like a whole big collection of them. And it's funny just going back through them and thinking, you know, like seeing what artists, what they're doing now and when they first got into it. And even like on some of the spotlight, you know, parts of the magazines. That's how I actually come across that Thomas, was that McLaughlin?
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. I just come across that and I've been researching into it. No, I found he was on your podcast. So, oh, wow.
I know. It is. He's a great player. It's really funny. My boy will be looking at things on Instagram and he'll be going through videos. And I'll hear, you know, as soon as he goes by a video, one will pop up and I'll hear the licks. I say, oh, you must be watching Thomas. I can tell Thomas is playing him.
Oh, really?
Just from hearing it from the distance.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Very deep.
So let's go into, so one of your first bands. So you did bands in high school or outside of school?
Yeah. And this is going to sound funny because, you know, some of the first band names you come up with, I think the hardest thing about a band is coming up with the name, you know, and I believe it was actually called Heartbreaker. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit it. It is what it is. I can't go back and change the name. That was a high school band. And the cool thing about that, kind of like how, you know, Van Halen gets David Lee Roth in their band because, you know, he owns a PA system. Yep. The singer slash rhythm guitar player in the band, his dad owned the local music store. So it was awesome for us because, you know, we had the best PA of all the bands, you know, in the little teenage circuit. We had all the lighting, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the small clubs that we had play at, underage, we actually had some clubs that were called underage clubs. There's no drinking. You know, it's just kind of the place for the teens to go hang out. And when I say teens, I'm talking like 13, 16, 17, you know, quite young. And so kind of a drop-in center or whatever, just to kind of keep the kids off the streets and a nice place to be. And they would serve like pop and refreshments and stuff like that. But we would always blow the power in the place because we'd had so many amplifiers and PA requirements and lighting and stuff like that. Or not requirements, but just what we brought in and we'd blow the power. So it was always funny for that. But that was the very first band. A lot of trial and error, a lot of mistakes, a lot of, and this was long before internet, so you didn't have a website or anything to promote yourself. You used to actually go put the posters up on the walls, on the poles and bus stops and post offices and all those things, you know.
That was original band, was it?
I think we might have done one or two originals. We were more cover, like doing like The Kiss and Ted Nugent and, you know, maybe like The Cars and things like that. Just anything that was kind of rock at heart. Maybe some Iron Maiden, stuff like that. And throw some weird stuff in there too. Yeah.
Very similar to myself. Started an original band in 89 called Eclipse.
Okay. And, Eclipse.
Yep. And so we had, we did all the, like, you know, some Bon Jovi, some Van Halen, and slowly chucking, you know, putting the originals. Just that changeover when people start to sing along, it's like, oh, wow, you know, it's a great feeling.
It is a good feeling. Yeah. It is a really good feeling when people are like, hey, can you play that again? Or I really like that cover that you did of this.
Yeah.
And I always found, too, when you play an original, that was very, very rewarding to me when someone would come up and say, oh, can you play that one song again? Or what's that song that goes like this? That was your song. That's really, really rewarding when people like your own music.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So then after that, was it the Van Halen band, 5150?
I went through quite a few bands. Well, I shouldn't say that. I went through probably three or four, and I probably can't remember all of them.
Mm.
I was in another band. I don't even remember the band, the name, but we're another top 40 band. We do a little bit more contemporary stuff like Journey. We do some Rush and things like that. Mm-hmm. I did gravitate for a little while, Rush tribute band. Just mm-hmm. never found the guy who could handle the vocals. So we never really, but the drummer was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Bass player was phenomenal. The guitar, that was the guitar, and I did an okay job with that.
Yep.
From there, went to another band called Flaunting Doxy. And here again, too, was maybe a few originals, but we were booked as a cover band. And it would be everything from like Stone Temple Pilots, okay. Do some, top 40 rock, a little bit of Canadian rock, like Tragically Hip, bands like that. I'm trying to think what else, but that was a pretty decent band. And that gave me a lot of experience in the clubs, because we played in the clubs a lot with that band.
Mm.
Shortly after that band, I think that's when the 5150 Van Halen tribute band came in. And that was probably, other than my own original band, which I'll get to later, that was probably one of the best experiences for me as a musician for many things. It taught me everything about the business.
Yep.
The singer that was the lead singer in the band, it was mostly a Sammy Hagar era tribute band. It was very, very, it was his baby, and he took the band very seriously. You had to be out there interacting with the crowd, your appearance had to be good. You don't walk in. Like, I used to actually carry a milk carton, like a milk crate, whatever you call those things,
yep.
or a pop crate. Have my cords, my stuff thrown in this thing. He's like, you can't do that anymore.
Oh, really?
It had to be rack cases because I learned from that moment, impression is everything.
Mm.
And you see someone walking in with an amateur, carrying a shopping bag with your cords in it, it doesn't look very professional.
Yeah.
And a professional image was taught me the world. And then, of course, when you go to a tribute band, any kind of band, especially a Van Halen tribute band or a Rush tribute band or, anything like that, a Dream Theater tribute band, people are expecting chops to be right on the money. It was a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And it was probably best playing I've ever done in my life because I practiced around the clock. I practiced so hard for that gig. And then, like I always say in my life, once you get the gig, no matter what you're doing, whether you're in a band or you're doing a job, you should always be working every day like you're trying to get the job that day. So I really practiced hard to get the gig, and then I really worked my butt off to keep the gig. It was about a year and a half, I think I did with them,
okay.
Maybe a year.
Mm.
And then from there, then I went on to the next chapter.
Had you played many of the Van Halen songs before that?
Yeah, a few. I was all like some of the classics, like, Ain't Talking About Love, Unchained.
Yeah.
Let's see what else would we play in other bands. Like, the typical hits that people would expect, maybe Running With the Devil, Somebody Get Me a Doctor, Half a Teacher, maybe in a couple other bands, but maybe three or four in each of the other bands. It wasn't a huge Van Halen. I actually contemplated one time with the one band we're in, we were going to do a tribute, but we were going to do a tribute. So we would do three sets dedicated to three artists. One artist would be Van Halen. And we started to do this, and then we never did it officially, but we're learning the material. So Van Halen's going to be one. Collective Soul of all bands. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, yep. They got Shine.
Yeah. And I don't like them as much today, but they're a big influence on me. So I can't say I don't like them because they were an influence on me. So Collective Soul, Van Halen, and Stone Temple Pilots was what we're going to do as a tribute, which would have been kind of neat.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, I got a job in a Stone Temple Pilots cover band, but unfortunately I couldn't take the gig. That's when my daughter was first born, so they couldn't take it, but it would have been good fun.
I know. And it's when you have kids too, like I may get back into it down the road, but when your kids are young, it's difficult.
Yep.
I remember a junior here now when he was just a baby. That's kind of I shouldn't say a baby, but a young child.
Yep.
That's what kind of made me want to get out of the scene. I'd be packing up my guitars and he would, almost cry because daddy's going off and he didn't know when I was coming back.
Yeah.
Even if it was just practice, he was worried, right? And it really breaks your heart. You're pulling out of the driveway and your little guy's crying in the window or something like that. So it really pulls at your heartstrings a little bit.
It does, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'll get that now. I've got two little ones now as well. So it's nearly 1 and 2 year old. So.
The kids are great. So, I mean, I would trade, I love music, but I would trade it all away in a heartbeat for kids. Music will always be there waiting for you, but kids grow up pretty quick. So
yeah.
At the time with them, and do your music when you can as well too.
That's right. And I mean, thankfully, my oldest daughter, she's 21. Okay. But she plays as well. And so we do a lot of gigs together. So that's
awesome.
That's really good fun. Yeah.
It is. And I'm the same way with my boy. He's only 12.
Yep.
He's a great musician, and he's a lot of fun to you know, do the music with. So that lets me do best of both worlds. It's good to be a dad and play music. So yeah. I like that.
So what was your most challenging song to learn for the 5150, the band?
I know right off the top of my head, the solo for Ice Cream Man.
Oh, really?
I used to absolutely hate it. Mm. I could play Eruption back in the day way better than I could play Ice Cream Man, and that stretch, and I have the large hands, and I have a good stretch. But that stretch, I'd be working up to the solo, and I'd get to it, and I'd have to kind of get down on one knee and raise the neck of the arm of the guitar. It wasn't hard to learn it, just hard to play it.
Okay.
And it's one of those things where every once in a while, sometimes I would cheat and I would tap because I just couldn't get the fluidness of it. And so that was definitely the hardest one.
Yeah.
And I think Hot for Teacher, as far as that wasn't a hard song for the solos or anything like that, but just coming in at the right time with the drummer.
Yeah.
And I used to always tell the drummer, okay, if I don't come in at this spot, keep it going. And then we'd improvise depending on how the crowd was. If it was a dead crowd, I'd come in early. If it was a great crowd, I'd come in late.
Yep.
Or whatever. But that there were some tricky parts that way as well.
Yeah. So overall, learning all the Van Halen songs, so you think it really did improve your playing and learn a lot of new techniques from that?
A lot of new techniques.
Yep.
Yeah. I learned a lot of things. I think that's probably the most I ever learned about Van Halen, because it's one of those things where you don't just go out and, like you would do in my other cover bands, and just kind of, I could embellish the solos, or I could, you know, if I didn't know the changes all that well, I could fake it. But when you're in a tribute band, you got to be as close to the real thing as possible. So it was real military army training for me, if you want to call it that. It's a, you know, do or die kind of thing. It was very good for me.
Yeah. So what do you think some of the techniques that you didn't know before that you learning Van Halen songs?
Well, it was just more improving on the tapping and things like that too.
Yep.
My timing. So I didn't really learn any real flashy techniques, like no string skipping or, you know, sweeping or anything like that. I'm not a real trick guy.
Yep.
I don't know a lot of tricks on the guitar. Maybe some noises and things like that. Just it improved my playing, improved my tapping. You know, my sense of timing was something I learned huge, because, you know, I was playing with some musicians now that were quite a few levels up in caliber. Many levels up in caliber from who I played with before. So I think really, as far as learning, not a lot of tricks, just improved as a musician overall. That's what I think I took away from that time.
Yeah. Okay. Now I know this is an audio podcast, but I just want to ask you a quick question. So when you are doing your tapping with your pick, do you put it in between that middle finger? Is that how you do it?
I've noticed myself recently. I've been watching my hand. I do normally like to tap with my first finger.
Yep.
So what I'll do there is one of two things. I'll hold it in the middle.
Yep.
And I'll tap. I'll stick it in my mouth and I'll tap.
Okay.
And then lately, a lot of times too, I'm noticing I'm tapping now with my middle finger, and I'm trying to determine what I like better. I think my whole life I've been tapping with my first finger, but I'm starting to think my middle finger, I'm trying to be like the engineer guy and try to analyze it. And I think it's center weighted. It's like a pendulum. And it almost feels like I have better control. And so there's pluses and minuses in both ways, how I like it. So the verdict is still out of where I like it to be. But I don't tend to ever drop our picks anyways, that's for sure.
Okay, yeah. So have you got into two or three finger tapping?
No, well, I shouldn't say that. Yes, I have. I really like to learn from people like Jennifer Batten and Steve Lynch and those kind of people that do like the multi-finger tapping.
Yep.
I started to experiment a little bit. I did write one piece that features, I guess it'd be three finger tapping on the right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inspired by Joe Satriani was doing it a lot back in the day. And so I took a couple techniques I heard from him, and I added it to an instrumental of mine. And it's a very, very clean, clean piece. And it sounds really good. I didn't have the aid of string cameras like they use. And I actually did try it a couple times with tying a sock on the neck, whatever, just to get rid of the string ring.
Yep.
And I think I will still work on the piece because it's pretty cool. Yeah. It looks cool when you're doing it. But that's the only thing I've ever done with the multi-finger tapping. I'm more of just a one-finger tap kind of guy.
Yeah, same as me.
Yeah.
I think it's a Spanish fly where you got the peeking through the cord.
Yeah.
So are you using your thumb for that?
No, actually, I'm not. No, I would just use, I would use my first finger to tap.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Now, for Mean Street and things like that, then, yeah, I'm doing, like, the thumb and the first finger.
Yep.
And I still can't do that song well either, but that's where I would use my thumb and first finger.
Yeah, it's another one of my favorites, Mean Street. Great song.
Yeah, that's a trick.
Yeah.
Good one, for sure.
Yeah, so after that, so you had your original band, right?
Finding Core.
Finding Core, yeah.
Yeah, I did that 12 years, from 2000 to 2012.
Okay.
And it's everything I had learned in the 5150 band, I took to this band, and I expanded on what I learned. And I took, like, the marketing ideas, learned from that, and the image, and just looking professional. And fortunately now, by this point, the internet was pretty big. Internet was just kind of coming out when I was in the Van Halen tribute band. And now the internet was what kind of almost like it would still be dial-up internet, but at least people had websites and things like that.
Mm.
And I got into graphics design and website design very early. So I was able to build the websites for the band and, it looked really credible online. We looked like, these guys look like they can play. And then, of course, once we built our image, we had to make sure we could play.
Yeah.
And it was good. We went back and forth from being an all original band with a few covers to all covers with a few originals. It was so all over the place. Probably around 2005, we became an all original band, recorded our first record in a professional studio, mastered by some serious professionals. And it was a lot of fun. It was probably the most fun I've ever had for the most part in entire life musically.
That's great. And so you finished up in 2012 with that one.
In 2012, I pulled the plug and shut it down.
Okay, yeah. And were they mainly your songs? Did you write most of the songs?
On the first record, no. On the first record, the original founding member of the band, the singer guitar player, rhythm guitar player, he wrote all the music. I kind of helped with some arrangements, but I can't take credit for the songwriting on that one. And then he had left. We had a couple different singers come and go. And on the newest record, which was released in 2010, I wrote all but one song on that record. So it was a lot heavier guitar. There's a lot more guitar in it, a lot more guitar focus.
Yep.
Whereas the first record was more about the song and less about the guitar. And I'm not saying it's better or worse either way, because I still love the first record a lot, even though there's not a lot of crazy guitar on it. It's just songs didn't necessarily call for crazy guitar solos. And even the new songs don't necessarily call for crazy guitar solos. But people that knew me as a guitar player back in the day for doing the Van Halen thing and things like that, I think some of them were happy because they got to hear me do what I was kind of better at on the newer record. So it was, you get to kind of show off a little bit on the newer record, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. And so you guys had a lot of the endorsements as well.
Yeah, that was, that's what really spearheaded. I don't think I had a single one before Finding Core.
Yep.
And with Finding Core band, it started off with a guitar string company that approached us, our very first endorsement. I think it was that one. It's a string company that's no longer in business. They're called Firewire Strings. And I absolutely love them to death because we were kind of, at the time, almost a borderline Christian band. We were kind of in the Christian music circuit. Our singer was very spiritual and a little bit religious, so we were kind of going down that road.
Mm.
So we were playing at a rock and roll church. And at the end of the show, doing like normal, I'm packing up all my stuff. And I didn't think I had a very good show that day. I was playing on gear that wasn't all mine because we were opening up for another band. So using some of their gear, and I was just as uncomfortable could be.
Mm.
And so I'm packed up, and this guy reaches out, goes to shake my hand. He introduces himself from the string company and says, "Hey, I really like what you guys did. I'd like to keep a few packs of our company strings, and I'd be trying to like you guys to play with them." I'm like, I was almost out of, it's almost like, do I have to pinch myself? Is this real?
Mm.
And lo and behold, took him home, put him on the guitars and loved the string. And with that endorsement, went on to a couple other small ones. Probably within the next month or two, we're endorsed by Dava Pick. It's a guitar pick company. It's not a guitar company or things like that. But it's something that to this day is still, I still play the Dava Picks every day of my life. Mm-hmm. So I stay with companies if I believe in the product and they're good people, I stay with them for life and I'm still with them. That's from like 2000 and, the early 2000s.
Oh, wow. See, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Then I learned the techniques and marketing and things like that between myself and my better half, Sandra Lee here. We put packages together, promo packages, not just for myself, but for every member of the band. Yep. And we solicited companies like, Ampeg for the bass player and Pearl and Tampa and Mapex, for the different drummers that we had over the years and, microphones for the singers. So it wasn't just for me. Yep. We contacted all the manufacturers for every member of the band. And it actually worked out really, really good in our favor to the point where a lot of people, would kind of hate us because we were just a small town band. We'd show up looking like we had the trucks of equipment and they're kind of like, wow. And at the same time, they hate you too. It's just nature of the game, right?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing I want to start getting to now, with the podcast and everything. So hopefully.
Yeah, it does. And it will help having a platform, whether it's like YouTube or a podcast, like an audio podcast or just anything. It's sometimes it's like a big popular page forum for that matter. Once you build a little bit of an audience, that's what it's all about. And that's what I encourage guitar players and I'm going to say musicians in general. Mm. If you're seeking out band endorsements, create an audience first. Yep. And once you create that audience and interaction and be honest about it too. A lot of these people will go out there and they'll buy views for their pages or their platforms. And the only person fooling is you. Well, the truth. Mm. And everyone else, you're fooling them. Be honest about it. Be organic. Grow your website. Grow your pages realistically. Mm. And when you do reach out to some of these people, they're more than happy to come aboard, aboard with you and work with you. And it happens for no matter what you're in, whether podcasting, YouTube shows, anything like that, bands,
Yeah, that's good. Good tips.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, excellent. So now with your podcast, so is it mainly podcasts or YouTube podcasts? Is it a bit of both?
It's the funny thing is I'm just getting into podcasting per se.
Okay.
Some people refer to it as a podcast, and it kind of is. It is a podcast. I started putting the shows up on iTunes probably in early, no, I shouldn't say early, probably mid-2016, mm-hmm. Just because I had a fan, a really cool guy, contact me one time and said, I really like getting your shows, but sometimes I can't sit at home for the hour and a half and catch it. Mm. I'd love to hear the interviews while I'm at the gym or driving in the car. Yep. And, you had a great suggestion. And number two, like if depending on your internet plan or your data plan for your phone, you don't necessarily want to be streaming a YouTube video in your car. Like I know people aren't watching it,
yep.
But that's a lot of bandwidth and you're killing your data plan. So having an audio podcast was a great idea. I thanked them immensely for it. And I don't dedicate as many resources to the audio podcast as I should.
Yep.
And I'm trying to. I'm not one of these guys that make fake New Year's resolutions and say, okay, in 2018, I'm going to make sure I get all my shows up on iTunes. That's unrealistic. I don't make goals that I can't keep.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to at least populate it. Mm-hmm. But my show is basically it's a video show on YouTube. I try to keep it to 90 minutes, no matter who the guest is. Now, I have broken that rule a few times.
Yeah.
And, I really like to keep it as close to 90 minutes as possible because I always want people to want more. Even if it's the best conversation possible,
yep.
I want people to want to come back the next time I have like a Jennifer Batten on or a Bumblefoot or, any of those people. Right? I want that demand. So 90 minutes on video, and then I'll do a lot of things where I'll do your reviews or just live improv playing broadcast where I'm just playing the guitar, playing some of my own music and things like that. But I love it. It's my new band of choice, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a band that I'm going to deal with all the drama and idiosyncrasies of every different band member, even if you love the guys and girls that you play with.
Yeah.
now you're dealing with one person. And as long as you can deal with your own idiosyncrasies and hang out, you're okay.
That's right. So now, so you're pretty much just doing that full time in your, you're doing photography as well? Is that right?
I do, yeah. I used to work in radio, and it's not as glamorous as what people think. I wasn't the guy behind the microphone or anything like that. I would love to have been, and I would have learned a lot for what I'm doing now. But I used to work in radio as like the web guy. I was the guy who had built all the websites for the radio stations and all the digital ads. And I was running my own business because, like I said, back, you go way back to the dawn of the internet, I was starting to get into web design way back then. And I always thought, this is something I want to do for a living, is build websites. And photography is something in a million years I would have never dreamed. I hated photography. Mm. And believe it or not, until a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I hated video with a passion.
Not really.
I do not want to make video. I do not want to take a picture. Mm. And so I guess I'll say this. I'll say I learned photography from Sandra Lee, my better half here. She was one of these people that the camera does not make the photographer. She could shoot with, back in the day, a $70, you know, pawn shop, instant camera, but like 2 megapixel, you know, and she'd make beautiful photos.
Yeah.
And then you get an iPhone or an iPad, she can still shoot beautiful photos. And I'm like, and I would borrow people's cameras and I would take pictures and they can do a really expensive camera thing. This can be a great photo. And it was just horrible. Mm. It's like, okay, well, camera doesn't make the photographer. And when I got to web design for running my own business, started my own business in around 2000 and what year was that? I'm trying to think now. 2014, I'm thinking. I think that sounds about right. Mm-hmm. 2014, started my own business. And customers would say, okay, well, you take some product photos. You build up my website. Can you take some product photos? And I'd say, oh, you want my photography. I suck. And then I started to think after a while, like, okay, that what does that say about me if I'm saying I suck?
Mm.
It doesn't say a lot. So I started studying photography. I bought just a cheap camera, but I jumped to a brand name at a Nikon, and it was just the cheapest that you could buy from them with like $200 Canadian. So, you know, just real simple. Mm. You no detachable lens, nothing like that. And I started, just like I do with guitar and these people that I worship in guitar, I started finding these Eddie Van Halens of photography, so to speak.
Okay.
And there is some mentors that I just followed greatly on YouTube. Mm. Thank God for YouTube. Bought a lot of courses, digital courses,
yep.
And I got to the point where I was confident in saying to my customers that, okay, yeah, I'll shoot some photos for you. That'd be this much effort for photos. And I remember going to a few photo shoots being really, really nervous because I'm charging money now for this. So yeah. Like, am I going to be able to get money for this? And as much as I was a critic of my photography, just like I am of my own music, customers were like, wow. And once I started getting these wows from people and doing some family portraits, some a lot of times for free for different people, you get this wow factor from people. Then you're like, okay, I guess I don't suck. I'm not saying I'm good yet, but at least I could stop saying that I suck.
Yeah.
The same thing with video. When I produced video, I had to do it. When I was at the radio station, I was the guy that had to do it. And I remember having a meeting with my boss. I went into the boss and I shut the door and I said, boss, I'm not the guy for video. I'm horrible at it. I hate it.
Yeah.
And once I found out that it's actually fun, then I got a little bit better. And now I like it more than a website design because videos don't break.
Yeah.
I built a website for something and someone hacks it or something breaks.
Yeah.
Now you're a 24/7 tech support guy. Videos don't break. They take a lot of work to get them done.
Yeah.
But once they're done, you move on to the next one.
Okay, that's excellent.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much for that.
Cool. Awesome.
Appreciate it.
Okay,
all
take
right.
care now.
See you then, okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye. All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Eric. And yeah, definitely check out his channel. There's some great stuff on there. And subscribe to the YouTube channel so that way you don't miss out on any of his things coming up. Now, the other big news is, if you really do like my podcast and enjoying all the interviews, now, as you know, it does take a lot of time doing each podcast. You know, researching, recording, editing. It takes a very long time to just get one podcast up. So I've now started a Patreon page. For as little as $1, you can donate to help me keep Become a Guitarist Today podcast up and running. For the different donations, there are different packages of things you can get out of it. So please click on the link below, and I hope you do become a Patreon of my podcast. And don't forget, you can subscribe to my podcast so you don't miss out in any future episodes. So the money that you do donate will go to things like marketing, the publishing through Podbean, editing, upgrading the equipment. So all these things, yeah, they do cost money, And I'd really love to keep this podcast up and going for many years to come. So please do check out all the different donations and see which one is right for you. And I hope to give you a shout out on next week's podcast. So join me next week for my interview with Thomas McLaughlin. Now, if you don't know who Thomas is, yeah, check it out online. He started at the age of 4. Steve Vai picked him up, but you'll hear all the story next week. So make sure you tune in next Wednesday. Until then, keep jamming.